you wish you could take back the worst day of your life?
Hello and welcome to another bonus episode of Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. I'm your host, Matt Hurt, and if this is your first time listening, Anthology is ordinarily a podcast where I review The Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer and other classic and contemporary science fiction anthology series. In this bonus episode series, however, I am reviewing Amazon Prime's new sci-fi anthology series, Solos, which was created by David Weil. For archives of all of my episodes, including past bonus episode series, visit anthologypod.com, and you can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod, and follow me on Twitter at @OVAnthologyPod. And if you listened to episode 4 of this bonus episode series, bonus episode number 55, I tried something different with the Patreon spiel, and I'm going to try something also different with the Patreon spiel here. So, again, this is maybe embarrassing and awkward and stuff, but here we go. Are you in the market for more content from The Obsessive Viewer and our related podcasts, Anthology and Tower Junkies? You're in luck. Due to a government stimulus check and an overbearing fear of the outside world thanks to a global pandemic, Obsessive Viewer Podcasts is overstocked with Patreon content. Come on down to patreon.com/obsessiveviewer and take advantage of our deals on hundreds of extra content. We've got over 130 B-roll episodes at only $1 per month, TV reviews at $2 per month, full-length movie commentary tracks at $5 per month, and early access to full episodes plus unreleased and exclusive content at $10 per month. At these prices, we're practically giving this stuff away. Just head on down to patreon.com/obsessiveviewer to sign up. Again, that website is patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Sign up today. Okay, so that's that. And as I've been saying in all of these bonus episodes, I'm working on getting all 7 of these episodes recorded and ready to go to post on the Patreon page on May 21st. Right now it is May 18th. I took the day off of work today for a mental health day and to record as many of these as I could. So this is my second recording of the day, and I'm hoping tonight I will be able to squeeze out the last two. But May 21st, the $10 patrons will get access to all 7 of these episodes, whereas the regular podcast listeners, who I love dearly on the main feed, I do love you guys, thank you guys so much for listening and supporting me here, but they will get access to these bonus episode series one at a time, beginning on May 21st, and then following every Tuesday after that until I release all 7 of the episodes. So if you want all access to all of these, check out patreon.com/obsessiveviewer and get the $10 per month Patreon subscription level. So yeah, so thank you guys, and that's my spiel. So today on the podcast, I am going to be continuing my 7-part bonus episode series for the new sci-fi anthology series Solos, which, as I said, premiered all of its episodes on May 21st, 2021 on Amazon Prime Video. In this episode specifically, I'll be reviewing Jenny, which is episode 5 of the series, and it stars Constance Wu as a woman who asks herself why she's been in a waiting room for ages, only to realize it may be retribution for something she did in the past. Which I think that summary... I'm getting these little descriptions and everything from the Twitter thread that Amazon Prime Video tweeted, at this point, probably a month or so ago. I'm getting those descriptions from that Twitter thread, and it was kind of like the announcement Twitter thread and everything. And I gotta say, I feel like this description is a little bit spoilery. So yeah, I don't know. That's a little bit too much information. But on that same note, in my review, I'm going to be spoiling the entire episode of Jenny. So make sure you watch it before listening to this episode. And by the way, I'm also trying out new recording configurations and locations in my apartment that I'm doing. So I do apologize for the sound of the air conditioner in the previous bonus episode and the kind of echoey effect there. I was recording in a certain space in my living room, and I don't know that I like it in that space. So just more tinkering and everything. Right now I'm recording in a more treated area of my living room, which is kind of funny because it's right by my kitchen, which I think would be more echoey, but I don't know. Anyway, this is all prime stuff for Patreon. This is the kind of content you get at the $1 level on Patreon. So patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Okay, so this episode of Solos stars Constance Wu as Jenny, and she's known for her roles in Crazy Rich Asians, Hustlers, Fresh Off the Boat, and she was also in an episode of Dimension 404 on Hulu, which I covered in bonus episode 18 of this podcast. Like, holy crap. First of all, she was in the episode that she was in was called Bob. I don't remember her role in that episode. I don't really remember that episode terribly well, except there was like an alien or something. I don't know. But just, it's just kind of crazy to me that, I reviewed that episode of television in bonus episode 18 of the podcast, and here I am recording bonus episode 56 of Anthology, which is insane to me because Anthology I created as a just as a way for me to watch The Twilight Zone in podcasts about my watching The Twilight Zone, and I'm on episode of my main feed. I'm on episode like 73 or 4 of the main feed, and I'm up to bonus episode 56. So it's just insane to me how this has grown and everything. And I do appreciate you guys' support and everything. So Constance Wu, to round out her credits, she was also in a movie called Parallels from 2015. And I'd originally kind of envisioned that these bonus episodes would be accompanied by a B-roll episode that I would put on Patreon when the episode actually releases, and each episode would kind of have each bonus episode for each Patreon B-roll episode would have like a little mini review of a corresponding science fiction movie or show or what have you that is somehow related to the episode of Solos that I'm reviewing, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But I think what I might do is, and this is all superfluous because the people who are Patreon supporters know this already because this is in the future, but I think what I'm going to do is use those B-roll episodes. I'm going to record little like progress reports of my playing of Mass Effect The Legendary Edition, which I just got my hands on. That came out May 14th. And that weekend of May 14th to May 17th or 16th, I had to watch a ton of stuff for Indie Film Fest because I was on the jury and stuff. So I was like, I played a little bit of Mass Effect, but not as much as I would have liked to. So I'm looking forward to this weekend just digging into Mass Effect after I get my Anthology stuff in order. So anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying that Constance Wu was in a movie called Parallels, which is a science fiction movie from 2015 that maybe I'll check out eventually. Writer for this episode was Becca Bowling, and interestingly enough, she played she was an actress in an episode of Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. She played synth female attendant. I don't remember what episode it was. I didn't mark that down, but that's neat because Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams was a fun show that was on Amazon Prime also. And I think it was like co-produced by a production company across the pond. But it's interesting because this might be a complete mistake considering that my intention with these bonus reviews is to record them and then release them all on day one of the release of the show. And I'm already behind because the show is premiering in a couple of days. So I need to kind of crunch and get these episodes recorded and everything. So having said that, this might be a mistake for me to do, but I do plan on finally covering Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams this year. Absolutely, like, hard stop. It's going to happen this year. 2021 is like the year that I finally cover this show that was in like 2018. So I'm going to do that regardless. But my plan is, and again, this might be a mistake to reveal this because I can't guarantee I'll get it done, but I'm looking at doing that bonus episode series in the same style that I'm doing the Solos ones. So I'm thinking that I'll do week-to-week releases when I get them all done, but all 10 episodes will be available all at once for the $10 Patreon supporters on the day that the first episode of that bonus episode series comes out on the main feed. And I'm looking at August August 3rd being the start of that bonus episode series. So if all goes as planned, I have enough lead time that I'll be able to bank all of those episodes. I'll release all of them on the Patreon for the $10 subscribers on August 3rd. And then from there, we'll go week to week on the main feed with all 10 episodes. So that's what I'm looking forward to. We'll see what life has planned for me. Becca Bowling was in an episode of Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. So, I mean, cool. And now she wrote an episode of Solos. Director for this episode, as is the case with many of these episodes, is David Wilde, the creator of the show. And like I've said before, since this show is by design, kind of pretty bare bones and everything, I'm just going to go ahead and go into my feelings as a viewer on this episode of Solos. So I feel like this episode really leaned into a more comedic tone for the most part, for most of it. And to be honest, that first time I watched it, I really wasn't as engaged with it, with that tone and everything. And also, I kind of felt like that since this is the first episode where a character doesn't interact or play off of another character in terms of like a robot or an AI character, I found that to be kind of distracting because Constance Wu, her character, is very like it's a unique performance and a unique tone to strike because it does play up this whole like train wreck party animal kind of character, but it is shielding this incredibly depressing and sad and horrific truth underneath it. So I don't know. I just kind of found it a little bit distracting that her interactions, her monologues are all we have to kind of go off of. And it was kind of fun to see her play like a bit of a train wreck character. It wore pretty thin as the episode progressed, but when it shifted to that more dark kind of tone and that more dark, the darkness, as the darkness beneath that facade of a train wreck kind of day drinking drunk person in a waiting room, as the facade kind of became was lifted off and it revealed a much darker reality behind it. I kind of really latched onto that and I really appreciated that and respected the episode for it. And also toward the end of the episode, I really started to wonder how it would tie into science fiction because I honestly could not tell like where it was going in terms of that. And that really played up that reveal at the end because I was really, really shocked by the end of this episode. And I think it really tied the writing together and hit this emotional surface in a really, really big way. Overall thoughts, I thought that the episode was solid. So now that I've gotten that out of the way, I will talk more specifically about this episode of Solos, episode 5, titled Jenny. Okay, so right off the bat, I've seen this episode a couple of times, and that first time I watched it, I honestly did not get the impression that she was in a waiting room. Like, I don't know if it was because I watched the episode really late at night, or if it was because I just didn't pay close enough attention to it, but right from the start, I just didn't get the fact that she was in a waiting room. So before I started this episode, the second time when I was making my notes, I put, so she's in a waiting room according to the plot description, but I didn't really get that from the episode. And then as if the universe was playing a cruel joke on me and making me feel like, with the intention of making me feel stupid or what have you, the episode starts and literally the opening of the episode is a rapid fire series of multiple shots of empty seats, magazines, a fish tank, literally all of the accoutrement that signals that we're in a waiting room. And apparently in that first viewing of it, that just completely went over my head. And maybe part of that is because we see that first magazine we see is for the Remember Me robot, which is alluded to or is featured in the Tom episode. Maybe I was a little bit distracted by that Easter egg, but also that might be a little bit of me making an excuse for my lack of attention. And as the episode in that first viewing, as the episode played out, I really thought that, like, I kept thinking that this was supposed to be her neighbor's house, specifically because, like, you can focus on all of the different parts of the of the set to show that it's a waiting room. But the actual overall set design just looks a little too futuristic and a little too, for lack of a better word, it looked a little too homey. Like, it looked like a home. And that's where it kind of got a little bit muddled with me. But that second viewing really cleared that up because I paid closer attention to it. So paying attention pays off. So we're introduced to Jenny. She is sitting in the waiting room, clearly still a little drunk. She mentioned she's still a little drunk. She's dressed as an angel. And she mentions that she was at a two-year-old's birthday party, and it was a costume party, hence why she's dressed as an angel from the Bible. And I feel like that's fine enough as in terms of symbolism and foreshadowing and everything. And then she mentions that she's still probably a little drunk. And I thought that that's when it should key us into the fact that there's something seriously wrong here, since she was drunk at a two-year-old's birthday party. And that I thought was an interesting way to kind of bring us into this setting and this character and everything. And but I kind of feel like that drunken aspect to the character kind of makes the episode feel a little bit more scattered and disconnected for me, which I'll go into more as I progress through this review. But it just kind of felt like a little it just felt a little bit too kooky. And I'll, like I said, I'll talk more about it as I go on, but I just kind of felt like, okay, this is a weird element to this story that, obviously it has a payoff at the end, but just right at the front, it kind of seems a little bit disconnected from the rest of it. So she talks more about how her and her husband are trying for a baby. And it's kind of funny in its crassness, talking about how, like, oh, just basically, that just means that I'm letting my husband ejaculate into me and with the hopes of building up his ego or something like that. And it's, I don't know, like that's kind of funny on the surface. But when you go back and view it in the context of her full story, it doesn't really hold up to repeat viewings, because this is an incredibly tragic, traumatic story. And to have it have such an important element of that be dismissed with this comedic kind of crassness and vulgarity. Like, I'm not a prude and I'm not offended by that or anything, but when viewed in the whole piece and the entirety of the entire piece, it kind of feels a little bit, not disrespectful. It feels a little bit careless with the emotional, struggle of the character. And I understand that it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to be mysterious. It's supposed to hold back that information until the end. But to go back and see her talk so recklessly and vulgarly about her attempts to get pregnant is super downer, and really, really colors the comedy aspect of it, which is it's a bummer, because that is the prevailing tone of the episode. Like, we're supposed to, at least in that first half, because we're supposed to see her as this kind of train wreck kind of character who doesn't really have her life together. She makes bad choices and everything. And then later in the episode, in the kind of the climax of the episode, we learn why she is that way, why this is a part of her life and everything. So I don't know. It just kind of feels a little bit disjointed and disconnected, in terms of tone and marrying that tone with the other, with the rest of it. So, she goes on to say that she feels like she was meant to be a mother. And she says, and again, this is just needlessly cruel and dark in terms of tone. But she says she feels like she was meant to be a mother because she's not afraid of poop or accidentally killing it anymore. And like, again, it's kind of presented as this kind of funny thing that this drunk woman is saying. Like, it's like supposed to be her inhibitions are lowered and she's saying what she's thinking and everything. And it's also hinting at her miscarriage and the kind of trauma that she suffered. But it's done in this tone that's supposed to be comedic, and like, we're not fully on board with the struggle and the tragedy of it and everything. So it just feels a little bit weird and out of place. And the kind of dryness with that, the dryness of her delivery is just overall disturbing in the full context of the episode. And it just kind of, I didn't like it. I didn't like that. So she goes on to talk about babysitting Tyler. And again, I'm going to say this, I think I said it in my kind of overview, but it kind of feels like this episode is lacking because this whole idea of her talking into a void. Like, we don't get her playing off of another character or another voice like in every episode that's come before this. So there is that disconnect of this person talking into a vacuum. And I should realize, that's what I'm doing right now. So, I don't know. I don't know if that says something about me or what, but, I don't know. It kind of feels like I was primed for her to at least play off of something. I don't know. But she talks about her babysitting Tyler, her neighbor, and how he watches her come up when she gets home. And she kind of, that's seeding this tragedy, the tragic element, the tragic reveal at the end of the episode, pretty well. Like, that's one thing that this episode does incredibly well, is it sets up that reveal at the end like really, really good, or really, really well. Anytime I say really, like, in anytime I have the urge to say good instead of well, when I should say well, I always think of a line from, I think, like, the first or second episode of 30 Rock, where Tracy Jordan says, it's one of the writers is like, oh, I'm doing good to Tracy Jordan. And then Tracy Jordan is like, Superman does good. You're doing well. Sorry, that always sticks in my head. Anyway, so she wants to bang Tyler's father. that is a hell of a segue to get to that. So I'm kind of on the fence about this. So she talked about her husband and how her and her husband were trying to have a baby. And then she transitions to talking about how she is babysitting, how she grew to babysit Tyler, and how the reason that came about was because Tyler's father was super hot and she wanted to have sex with him. And, there's this, like, so the vulgarity and wishing for infidelity is kind of funny, but it already makes her completely unlikable. Like, I had struggled with this, not from a morality standpoint, but I had struggled with this because I couldn't tell if she is telling the story of babysitting Tyler as this story about how she met her husband, because she was just talking about how her husband has a weirdly shaped dick and how they got sushi together on their first date or something. And then suddenly she's talking about how she is babysitting Tyler and how he watches her come up when she gets home. And then she's like, oh, I want to bang, you know, I want to have sex with Carl, his father. And like, I was wondering, like, okay, is that supposed to be her wanting to have an extramarital affair, or is this supposed to be her talking about her before meeting her husband and how she came to be, like, ready to become a mother? So I was just it felt a little bit unclear to me. And from what I understand, it was just that she wanted to cheat on her husband, which, I mean, you know, again, not a prudish thing, but it just doesn't make her likable in really any capacity. And it also doesn't really come across as comedy or even as, like, the character having lowered inhibitions from alcohol. It just comes across as being a deeply flawed and, frankly, shitty person for a character. So it just kind of seems like it plays up this whole train wreck element that's, I don't know, it's popularized in pop culture. I'll talk about that in a bit, but it just doesn't work for me. It's not compelling for me or anything. And it doesn't lead me to really like the character. But I will say that I did find some nice resonance with her when she was talking about how the bond with Tyler formed. And she talks about how he was incessant about telling her about Spider-Man, and she eventually just grew to care about him and like him. And again, this kind of repetition, this is a kind of common theme throughout most of these episodes, is this kind of, the script kind of hones in on one element to kind of repeat it and recur, like reuse it throughout the episode, and then kind of having a, maybe in some cases not a big moment, but having this kind of wraparound thing, or having it come into play. And in this episode, it is done spectacularly well, amazingly well, or the Amazing Spider-Man, ultimately well. So I don't know. Anyway, I got pretty far from home on that one. Anyway, okay, let's, okay, my homecoming to this, recording, that was a stretch. Anyway, let's swing back into this review. The repetition of Spider-Man references and talking about Spider-Man, talking about how Tyler is obsessed with Spider-Man, really, really primes us for the shock at the end. And in that respect, this is a very strongly written episode, and it is quite a bounce back from the previous episode, which I wasn't a big fan of. And this was just, I mean, it took a while for me to latch onto it. It took it, like, throughout most of this episode, I was not that invested in it. I wasn't that engaged by it. But when that hits at the end, like, that hits at the end, which obviously I'll talk about in a little bit. So she then goes on to kind of describe, and I love the kind of slow and steady pacing of the monologues that she delivers, because it is just transitioning her into these different elements of the character and loosening her up and telling her more truthful parts of her story. And so in that respect, she describes how she hates herself and how she doesn't blame her reproductive organs for betraying her. And holy shit, that's sad. Like, that is incredibly sad. That is such a downer. And also, I feel like it was kind of weird that she would describe all of that to an 8-year-old. So I don't want to nitpick or anything, but I thought that was kind of strange. But she follows that up with talking about how, like, that bond formed with Tyler, and how, like, the kind of listening and talking it out, talking their feelings out and everything, was reciprocated, because she was talking to him about how she comforted him for being bullied and everything. And that's a nice moment, and then it's undercut by the comedy, which I did kind of get a kick out of, because she says that, oh, Tyler then said that, oh, Vivian, I think the name was Vivian, Vivian says that you're sad. And it's just a comedic way to bring her into the fold and bring us into the fold of her realization that Carl had a girlfriend. And she mentions how the girlfriend was annoyingly beautiful and French looking, because she was French and everything. And she was just very disappointed and everything by that. And I really, at this point, I really, really thought that this was going to take a happy turn and reveal that her friendship with Tyler led her to meeting her husband wherever they got sushi and led her to being prepared to be a mother. I kind of, for some reason, I just thought that that was going to be the trajectory of the episode. And that was definitely not the case, because this goes into some very tragic, very sad, very, very horrifying places. So she talks about how she's still babysat after realizing that Carl had a girlfriend and would therefore not be paying her in sex for the babysitting, which, again, if she's married in that, like, that's just kind of weird how cavalier she is, or how just not, how that isn't a factor in it. It's just kind of not, I'm not saying that from a moral position. I'm saying that from just a convolution or convoluted position, because I don't know, am I supposed to be, like, is this supposed to be when she's single, or is it supposed to be just an extramarital affair that she wants? I don't know. It didn't really work for me. And she talks about how she became fond of Tyler, and then it gets to just some weird points where she talks about how she would pretend that it was her house and her life, and that she was Vivian or whoever the French woman was. And she says that one time she went to their bedroom, got naked, and dressed in Carl's girlfriend's shoes. And again, this is where I have, like, the most, like, not, I guess, most problem with this kind of train wreck persona, because the train wreck persona is supposed to be entertaining, but it's really just incredibly pathetic. And that I can't really forgive in this, because it just doesn't fit. It doesn't make her a sympathetic character the way that I think that it is intending to. And maybe that's my own personal bias, because, like, I just feel like in pop culture, culturally speaking, I feel like the romanticizing of self-medication through alcohol and like how wine is branded to like mothers and women because, oh, it's hashtag wine o'clock. And I don't like the idea of, you know, alcohol consumption and self-medication and everything being branded as a personality trait. Like, it's just, it's obnoxious and dumb and really pretty harmful in the grander scheme of things to people who have like addictive personalities. I don't know. Anyway, so Carl and the girlfriend found her in the bedroom naked with the shoes and kicked her out and said that she's never to come near Tyler again. And so that's when she reiterates and says again and kind of further primes us for the reveal at the end. She says that Tyler comes out to see her every time she comes home because they have kind of a shared driveway in their houses. And she doesn't think that they ever told him why she doesn't babysit him anymore. And so that's kind of priming us for the reveal at the end, the tragedy at the end. And I gotta say, it's more clear in this viewing that she's in a waiting room. It's just too vague in service of the reveal at the end of the episode. And then as I typed that note, she says, "I can't actually remember what I'm waiting for. Why the fuck am I here? I wish I could remember how I got here." And so that is like cementing the idea of her being in a waiting room and her being kind of in there waiting. And it also switches the tone of the episode. It transitions to a tone of her being at the birthday party, which is separate from her backstory of babysitting Tyler and wanting to have an affair with Carl. She goes on to recount the events of the party, and she says that she wasn't drinking, not at first, and she was annoyed at all the boring people and how they were showing her pictures of their kids and everything. So to hide away, she went to the bathroom and she hung out in the bathroom and she miscarried. Like, she reveals that she was pregnant and there was blood and she miscarried in the bathroom. And that was fucking intense and weirdly, weirdly cruel. And graphic and harsh. She talks about how what she'd been waiting for, what she'd been wanting, was right there in her bloody underwear. And like, that is just fuck. I mean, that is just that it feels a little too dark to me. And maybe as of this recording, it's May 18th, I might be more sensitive to that since a friend's wife recently miscarried in real life. And that just makes me more sensitive to that. And just, I mean, it just seems so cavalier and just in a little too matter of fact. And it seems more written for the idea of it being a reveal than it being like a traumatic moment for her, because the tragedy, the trauma that she suffers as a result of that, the actual trauma that leads her to the waiting room makes the miscarriage secondary and the trauma of that secondary. And that kind of feels just a little reckless and a little discombobulated. So she leaves the bathroom and she says that she drank and everything, which also, like, I just kind of wonder, like, what 2-year-old's birthday has a bunch of alcohol? Like, that's kind of a weird disconnect for me. But I haven't been to a lot of 2-year-old's birthday parties, so I don't know. So this switch in tone where she talks about the party is effective, and I'm really thankful that it isn't romanticizing day drinking or self-medicating, like I said before, but it's also carrying on this idea of like this comedic tone that has been present throughout the episode up until now. But it's clever in the way that it presents it as this fun party moment, carrying on this carefree kind of train wreck style comedic tone, but it's clever in the way that she presents it as that fun party moment, but then it gradually shifts over to that reality of like her not really partying or anything, but her fighting over the bottle and her being screamed at that she's ruining the party, and the realization that everyone sees that she has had some kind of medical emergency, and she looks down and sees that she's bled through her dress. And like, that moment is where everything kind of clicks together and really kind of comes home in the monologue. And honestly, like my issues, like they're not deal breaker issues by any stretch. Honestly, I think that in terms of writing, this episode is incredibly, incredibly like well written, and it's a very good like written piece. In the monologue department and in the pacing and the story elements and everything, it's just really well done. So she goes, and this is kind of, man, this is such an important part of this episode. So she talks about how she gets into her car. She's crying. She's delirious. She realizes like, oh, it's not that far from her house. She can still drive, even though she's been drinking, and she's clearly like not in a state to drive by any stretch. And as she's delivering these words, this monologue, this performance, Constant Wu's performance increases in intensity throughout these words, throughout these beats of this monologue. And it's just like, my qualms with the tone and the mismatch of the kind of story elements of this episode notwithstanding, I feel like Constant Wu gives an incredible performance, all things considered. Like, this is an incredible performance. So she talks about how she's swerving. She's not very coherent or anything. She hits a mailbox, and then she crashes into a tree. And she says there's colors and cracking and limbs, and then there's a beat. And she says, and a Spider-Man figurine. And then that's when she breaks down crying. And holy shit. So of the five episodes of this show that I've seen, this is, hands down, the single best moment so far for me. And I say that as someone who adored Anthony Mackie's performance in Tom and was really enamored with the use of a Rodecaster Pro in Leia. But what I love about this moment in Jenny, what I love about this moment is how shocking it is and how unexpected it was for me. Like, I literally gasped at this moment because for some reason, I don't know if it's because I wasn't as attentive to this episode as I would have liked to have been, or I should have been when I first watched it, or if it's because it is seated so well in the script, but I had no idea that that's where it was going. And to kind of back it up a little bit, even before it got to that, as I was watching it that first time, I found myself really wondering, like, wait, when is the science fiction element going to come into play in this? Because so far, there's nothing science fiction-y about this, except for her scanning her retina to start her car. Like, that's about it, really. And the reference to her husband being a bot consultant. But even that, I mean, I run automated bots in my job, but it's not Anthony Mackie, it's bots to process. Anyway, so bots to process, that is my rap name. And anyway, I gasped when the episode revealed that she killed a kid. That's a terrible transition. So I gasped, I was shocked, I was really into it, and then the episode breaks. It breaks into the quote unquote real world. And it's the reveal that her consciousness is currently being uploaded. That's why she's in the waiting room. And we get the design, or we get the logo of the whatever company it is. It's called E-Ternity, which I think is kind of cute. I wonder if that'll be referenced in one of the remaining two episodes. I'm not sure. But then the technicians say that she's ready for her memory extract because she's a memory donor. And that's when the technician realizes who she is and says, oh, she's that woman who, you know, killed a kid. And he says that it's that the memory extract is going to take 10 minutes and he has to go. Then he's going to go on his lunch break. And then he says, well, you know, I'll let her sit there for a while I go on my lunch break, and then I'll come back and do it. So it's kind of this cruel harshness, that really, really reminds me, like this episode is another episode that's very reminiscent in tone to Black Mirror, which I don't know if that's necessarily a compliment or at this point, or if it's a criticism that it's kind of just really playing into this kind of Black Mirror-esque reality, which I love Black Mirror. So, and this episode does kind of make it its own thing. So I can't really say for certain that I am criticizing it for that. I just think that it fits that tone. There's like a squirrel or something on my balcony. or maybe a cat. I can't tell, but pizza is going crazy. Anyway, so then that's really the end of the episode. And I want to mention that one of the technicians, I think it's the technician that's on the screen who has his back to us the whole time, is actually played by Chris Diamantopoulos, who played Joe Beaumont in Nightmare at 30,000 Feet from The Twilight Zone 2019, season one. Kind of an interesting connection to other science fiction anthology shows. And it's kind of, I do want to mention, like, just, this is an aside, I'm done with the review and everything, this is an aside, that it's, that the structure of the credits in the show is kind of weird, because when we get the credits, it shows, like, the I think it shows the cast, and then part of the crew, and then the co-stars for the episode. So, like, in this, like, every episode, quote-unquote co-stars Morgan Freeman as Stewart, because he does the voiceover, and then there's more crew. And then, like, when it's applicable to the episode, we get guest stars. And that's where I saw Chris Diamantopoulos' name. So I just thought that was kind of weird. I don't know what the deal is with that. But that is my review of Jenny. I mean, it is a very, it's a very tricky episode. Like, there's some things that I really didn't like about it in terms of the tone and romanticizing this kind of persona that I feel like in culture is just way too, I don't know. It's way too romanticized and dumb. It doesn't fit my personality or anything. Yeah. So I don't know. It just doesn't really fit with me. But the actual kind of reveal, the revelation at the end of the episode, does hit home. It does create this really intense revelatory moment at the end of the episode, which I did appreciate. I did appreciate it for that and thought that it was a really well-constructed, written episode. And the performance by Constance Wu is ridiculously good. She does a really great job of carrying the performance throughout the episode and carrying the episode because she's the only performer. So I really liked it for that. And again, I feel really icky and not really that interested in the, or I feel like it was a little reckless to go to the lengths of darkness that it does, but it does bring it home in a good way, or in a solid way, if not derivative way from Black Mirror, but that remains to be seen. So yeah, so that is my review of Jenny. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Let me know what you thought. And yeah, so next up I have two more. It's not a Dumo. I've got two more. Shout out to Comedy Bang Bang. Anyway, and Scott Aukerman. So anyway, I have got two more reviews of this show to go. I've got, I think it's Neera and Stewart. And again, Patreon at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. If you pledge $10 per month, you get access to all of that right up front. So you get access to, if you sign up today, you'll get access to the RSS feed that has these two episodes already available. So you won't have to wait until next Tuesday and the Tuesday after that. And yeah, and there's also a bunch of other fun, good stuff on Patreon that I post and everything. So it's great. It really helps me pay the fees to run all of the podcasts and everything. And it's really good to just, you know, make money off of this content. But if you are not financially able to support me on Patreon or anything, no worries, because I appreciate you listening at all. Especially 56 bonus episodes in and like 74 regular episodes in and like four or five special episodes. So anyway, I'm done rambling. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you next time for Neera and whatever the main feed episode is. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll see you next time. And now, here's a short clip from our Patreon-exclusive RSS feed. To hear the full clip and more exclusive Patreon content, go to patreon.com/obsessiveviewer and become a patron at the minimum rate of $1 per month. Thank you and enjoy. Today on the Patreon podcast thing, I am reviewing episode 6 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, One World, One People. So this episode is the kind of the culmination of this miniseries show on Disney Plus. And I do think that, or I hope that, like I said, I could not stifle that yawn. I really, really wanted to try to conceal that, but I couldn't. So anyway, as I said last week, I'm really hoping that The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has a second season. I really hope that there's more to this format for these characters. And I kind of feel like the ending of this episode and the season, I kind of feel like that leans into that with retitling it Captain America and the Winter Soldier. But who knows? However,
Anthology is edited and produced by Matt Hurt and presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For a full archive of our episodes, go to anthologypod.com/archive. You can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod and follow the show on Twitter at OVAnthologyPod. If you enjoy the show, please take a couple minutes to leave us a rating and a quick review on Apple Podcasts. This is the easiest way to support what we do, and all it costs is a little bit of your time. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can make a PayPal donation at anthologypod.com/donate or support us on Patreon for recurring donations and access to commentary tracks and B-roll audio recorded exclusively for patrons at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Every donation goes toward paying the fees to keep the podcast running and is greatly appreciated. Official Anthology merch, including shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more, can be found in The Obsessive Viewer's TeePublic store. You can find a link to the store in the show notes of this episode and at anthologypod.com/donate. Or you can simply search for Obsessive Viewer at teepublic.com. For information about The Obsessive Viewer's annual live event showcasing short horror films from local filmmakers, check out shocktoberinirvington.com. And for an archive of all our events, as well as news about potential future events, head over to obsessiveviewer.com/live. For more podcast content, you can find our flagship movie and TV review and discussion show, The Obsessive Viewer Podcast, at obsessiveviewer.com and on Twitter at obsessiveviewer. You can also find Tower Junkies, a podcast where Matt and co-host Tiny share their love of all things Stephen King and his magnum opus, The Dark Tower series, over at towerjunkiespod.com and at towerjunkiespod on Twitter. And finally, check out The Secular Perspective, Tiny's side project podcast, which tackles current events and life's big questions from the perspective of secular hosts Chad and Amanda at thesecularperspective.com. Bumper music for this podcast comes courtesy of As Good As It Gets, which can be found at facebook.com/asgoodasitgetsband. You can also find As Good As It Gets music on Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Kitty! Yeah.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.